We were discussing verse 36. Jiva Goswami explains in the purport about five different types of devotees. And this brings us, of course, to the question about our own. What is our, when we talk about five kinds of devotees, we're talking about five kinds of rasa. And then it brings the question, what is our rasa? Do we have a rasa? Of course we do. There's an interesting analogy that the acharyas explain about rasa. That every jiva has a particular rasa with Krishna, but it's not manifest, it's potential. And they give the analogy, Jiva Goswami gives the analogy that the process for awakening one's particular rasa is the same for everyone. That's hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam. So that's what sadhana bhakti is all about. It brings us to the point of realizing our sarup and our ras. And then he gives the analogy of like the rain of this particular nakshatra, which is something we don't have never experienced. But at least people who live in different countries, they say that they have the experience of something similar. I had some friends who lived in South Africa, and they said after rains, sometimes they would find jewels on the beach, different gems and jewels. And that beach is protected by the government. And if you try to, you know, take those jewels, you get arrested. So this nakshatra is called Swati Nakshatra. So the rain is one, and the rain is falling on the ground. And, well, two analogies are there. One is that when the rain falls on the ground, it's the same rain in the same ground. But according to the seed, what kind of seeds are in the ground, then different flowers and fruits manifest, although the rain is one. So the same thing, the hearing and chanting Krishna Nam Sankirtan, hearing Krishna's Harikata, Leela Kata, it's the same for every jiva, but one jiva may be in Vatsalya Ras, or Madhurya Ras, or Sakhi Ras, Dasi Ras, and at the point of, they generally say at a Sakti in Bhav, then it becomes clearly revealed what is that person's eternal relationship or rasa with Krishna. So the other analogy, Jiva Goswami said that during one particular constellation, stellar constellation, which is called nakshatra, it's called Swati, S-V-A-T-I, Swati. When a rain falls during that constellation and it falls in different places, it creates different objects. I mentioned this once before. It's rather interesting phenomenon. But again, for us empiricists, we want to see all these things. We want to actually see it with our eyes and then we'll believe it. But nevertheless, it's written in Shastras and people have seen it and people have written about it. So when the rain falls during that nakshatra and it falls on the hoof, the feet of a cow, it forms a yellow pigment, which looks like that very yellow tilak you see sometimes in the market. It's the same shade, gorochana. Gorochana. That's why he says go, because it's from the cow. And that pigment is found inside the hoofs of the calf, inside the body of the calf. And when it falls on the wild deer, there's some kind of deer in the forest, it forms kasturi. You know, musk? You know, we say musk, kasturi. It comes from, Karmis, they derive it from the navel, from the belly button. The belly button, they call the musk ox, or it's a type of deer. But the Shastras say that when the rain falls on that animal, forest animal, then it produces this kasturi. And when that same rain falls on the ocean, the oysters that are in the ocean, they drink some of that water. They drink some of that water that's falling through that nakshatra or constellation. Then on those, when they drink that water produces pearls inside the oyster. It's not that every oyster has pearls, only certain ones that drink the water during that nakshatra. So in the same way, this is how they explain the... and then it forms... When that rain falls on the head of an elephant during that nakshatra, it makes a pearl inside their head. It's called Gajamoti. If any of you have read any of Kushikrata's books, sometimes there's books that Stavamala and Stavavali, where Rupa and Raghunath describe the beauty of Krishna. And Radharani, they say that underneath Radharani's nose, she wears an elephant pearl. So So sometimes the translators, they say an elephant-shaped pearl, which is kind of funny. Because they see moti or hati moti. Hati means elephant and moti means pearl. So they think, oh, this must be a pearl that's carved like an elephant, like a tusk on it and whatnot. But actually it's not. It's round pearl. It's naturally round. And it forms just like in the human body. Sometimes when there's an anomaly or, let's say, abnormality of the kidneys or the gallbladder, they produce what they call kidney stones or gallstones. You heard of these things? Kidney stones? And then they have operation or people pass them out. And they're little stones. And they're not shaped like elephants. They're not in the shape of an elephant or alligator. They're round. They're naturally occurring. So the same thing, when this rain from the Swati Nakshatra falls on the head of the elephant, it forms a round pearl inside their brain, inside their head. And when they die, then they find that inside there. So what's that all about? That analogy is that the rain is falling through that Nakshatra and falling on different entities, elephant, oyster, musk deer, etc. It forms different substances. So someone might say, well, how, if my guru may be in Sakiras, but I may be in my Nitya Sarup, my Sarup may be in Madhurya Ras, so how will my guru be able to bring me to Madhurya Ras? But the guru gives you the rain. He takes you out in the rain. The rain, the hearing and chanting is the rain. So that's the magic of Krishna's name and the magic of the Diksha mantras. They are Kam Gayatri Gopal mantra, which are given by Guru. And they will fulfill the inner desire and inner need of the soul. In some cases, you can see that. Examples are there. We mentioned yesterday, Duki Krishna. His Guru, Hridaya Chaitanya, he's in Sakiras. And he gave Diksha mantras to Duki Krishna. And those mantras, and he also gave him Shiksha. He said, you should associate with Jiva Goswami. So when he came to Vrindavan and he associated with Jiva Goswami, because you see, ultimately it's all managed by Krishna. Because Guru is Krishna Shakti. Krishna Shakti means the energy of Krishna, which is moving by the will of the Lord. Just like our body moves by our will, and we have different energetic capacity, and we use it according to our will. We have energy, creative energy, or destructive energy, or maintenance energy, and we direct our body in a certain way, and we exert energy. It's called work or movement or play. In the same way, Krishna has unlimited energy. So the guru is an energy of Krishna, and his energies are moving by the will of Krishna. Krishna wants more than anything for the jivas to realize their sarup, to realize their eternal rasa with him, and to engage in a loving relationship with him. So that's why the acharyas use the phrase that Krishna will manage everything. So you may meet a guru who's in a particular ras, and you're in a different ras, maybe a higher ras. So you may wonder how you'll come to that. But just as you met your guru by divine arrangement of the Supreme Lord, and that's Krishna sent you that energy of guru. Guru, what's that verse is there? Brahmanda Brahma Dekon Bhagyavan Jeev. Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Beach. By Krishna Prasad, his mercy is that he gives his energy to you. He extends himself by extending his energies. And his spiritual energy, that first manifests before us, is his energy of mercy in the form of guru, Kripa Shakti Murti. So he may give Diksha mantras and some Shiksha and elevate us beyond the modes of nature. Gradually we'll climb up through the material energy, through Rajagun, Tamagun, etc. And then that same Krishna who brought you to Guru, he'll also inspire the Guru to say, oh, you should go to Vrindavan and associate with Jiva Goswami. So somehow everything, you're in good hands when you're in Krishna's hands. And that's what faith is all about. Faith is all about believing in Krishna. Trust and love, that's the meaning of faith. So when one has faith in God, then he trusts God and he loves God, or at least he's endeavoring to attain love of God. But he has trust there. Just like if you have faith in your husband or faith in your wife, there's a certain amount of love being exchanged and a certain degree of trust there also. So these two attributes are part and parcel of the conception of Shraddha. So then Krishna, he's brought me to this person, and this person is guiding me, and I'm going forward. Now this person is saying, you should go to Vrindavan and see Jiva Goswami. So Dukhi Krishna, he left his guru in Mayapur, Vidai Chaitanya, and he came to Vrindavan and he met Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami started to say, oh listen, I'm writing this Gopal Champu, it's really nice, listen. So he started speaking about Gopal Champu and so many pastimes of gopis and Radharani. And Dukhi Krishna started becoming Sukhi Krishna. He became very happy to hear the sweet pastimes of Radha and Krishna from the mouth of Vilas Manjari, because Jiva Goswami is Vilas Manjari, one of the Ashtamanjaris of Lalita Sakhi's party and Radharani's party. So she or he or whatever has a very clear view of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So not only that, but then in the mood of proper Shishya, he asked Jiva, what can I do some seva? And he said, you can do some dham seva, as we were mentioning yesterday. He said, why don't you go to Seva Kunj and do some, well, not go to Seva Kunj, but they were in Seva Kunj. Because Radha Damodar Temple is in Seva Kunj. Seva Kunj is not a small park which we see today with some confined walls. Because if you came here 60 years ago, you would see that Seva Kunj was even larger than it is today. The walls were, there were even bigger walls. And there's a place called Kishorvan, which is kind of opposite Hira Jewelers. If you go to Hira Jewelers and go up to the left one road, you come to a place called Kishorvan. Some devotees rent rooms there time to time. They have a little Rasa Stali in there. And they have a fair amount of, small amount of property there with the border wall. And if you look, walk around the back there, you see all these little gnarly little trees. You say, oh, this looks like, just like Seva Kunj. Same topography as Seva Kunj. And if you make a little further inquiry, you'll find out, oh yes, actually, this there were some Brahmins, they had some argument about Seva Kunj, and so this part was cut off from Seva Kunj and taken over by this one Brahmin. So it's like, say this, you know, 50 years ago, this room was Seva Kunj. And then you and I were Brahmins and we were doing, you know, taking care of the visitors, and then we had some argument and I said, wait a minute. And then I, from that door over to that window, I put a wall. And then I put a sign and said, you know, this is Kishorvan. This is my place. And then you said, well, this is Seva Kunj. So that same way, 500 years ago, now we see these streets and all these houses and these little sweet shops and Brinda bookstores and all these kind of different places down there. But they are all Seva Kunj. And Radha Damodar and Jiva Goswami and Rupa, they used to sit in Seva Kunj. They didn't sit in Radha Damodar Mandir. The Mandir came later. They sat in Seva Kunj under Kadamba tree and wrote different books and had their Harikatha. So, Jiva Goswami, he inspired, he said, he told Dukhi Krishna, he said, yeah, why don't you sweep around here? Just sweep around here, do some sweeping and clean the area and do some Seva for Radha and Krishna, because they're having their pastimes here. It's just like the mood of Vrindavan in the old days before we all came along, I suppose, and probably changed it a whole lot. But the old mood was that when people would come to Vrindavan, they thought we should buy some good-sized piece of property and make a very small, humble kutir in the corner, make a wall around it, as is standard, and was standard the last couple hundred years. But a big-sized piece of property, make small little kutirs for a few of us, babas or devotees, whatever. But the rest of it, we should make nice gardens and leave all the big trees that are there, but plant flowers. Because this is Radha and Krishna's Nikunj. This is Radha and Krishna's Van, like Kishor Van and this Van. And this whole area is Vrindavan. This is where Radha and Krishna are having their pastimes. So we want to, we'll stay here a little bit in the corner, and we'll make a little, tiny little, you know, one little room dwelling, couple for a few bhavas, so we can do our bhajan, and maybe late at night, and you know, at Rasalila time, 12:30 at night, maybe Radha and Krishna will come to our van, or they'll come to our little place over here, our little ashram, and they'll have their leelas here. And in the morning, maybe we'll find an ankle bell, or maybe Krishna, you know, a peacock feather, or this or that, we'll find. So that was the mood, like 70, 80 years ago in Vrindavan. That's why you find, still here and there, you find these big walls, and then you say, oh, and you go inside, and there's just two little kutirs in the corner. And, of course, now all those properties are brought up, and been purchased, and now they're called MVT, and you know, this thing, that thing, and, you know, Chitrakoot and that coot and that, you know, so many different, and we're all living there in those places. But we put bricks on top of Krishna's Leela Stalis and put ourselves there. At any rate, that's part of, I guess, what's been happening. But at least the Vrindavan was a whole lot different years ago, and sometimes you go to different places and you see, I live in one place, it's a, kind of a garden area, and I was inquiring the history of it. And they were explaining that this is how it came about, that they have, this was the old mood, that they would keep a nice large garden and for Krishna's pastimes. So at any rate, he was doing that service, and Dukhi Krishna found an ankle bell, and that Tilak Stali is there. It's nearby, it's across the street from Radha Damodar, and up a little bit, there's the Tilak Stali, which is part of Sevakunj. And that's where Radha and Krishna are having pastimes, and Radharani was moving there with Krishna and dropped her ankle bell, and Dukhi Krishna found it. And then, along with finding that ankle bell, the ankle bell gained him entrance to Radharani's darshan, and Lalita Sakhi and Vishakha Sakhi, and then he was, you know, was revealed his actual sarup and Manjari Bhav, Madhurya Bhav. So like this, the Krishna made all arrangements by sending this jiva to Hridaya Chaitanya in Mayapur, and then inspiring his guru to direct him to Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan. So step by step, everything was managed by Krishna for this particular jiva of the name Dukhi Krishna, who later became known as Shyamananda, to realize his eternal rasa with Krishna. So that's just a little small discussion. So this purport, they talk about five different kinds of devotees, so I thought it would be interesting to discuss a little bit, you know, kind of a summary of the five different types of devotees and the different kinds of rasa. I was hearing some discussion the other day about Vaikuntha, and it's very interesting that in Vaikuntha there's practically there's the only rasa that you find in Vaikuntha. In other words, if you want Sakya rasa or Vatsali Ras or Madhurya Ras, you have to go to Vrindavan, Vraja Gokul. Because in Vaikuntha, practically there's hardly even any Dasya Ras. There's Dasya Ras, in other words, devotion expands up to the level of Dasya Ras, but there's hardly any demand for service. Because in relation to Lord Narayan, all the services are done by Lakshmi. You know, she practically does everything. There's hardly any. Most people in Vaikuntha, most of the jivas in Vaikuntha, they're kind of in a mood of awe and reverence. They're just kind of, they're having darshan of the Lord, and they're singing songs to the Lord, and they're singing kirtana, moving about here and there in Vaikuntha. But there's not actually much opportunity to even do much service. Because when you want to come forward to do some service, then Lakshmi is, like, there's no question of anyone cooking for Vishnarayan. Or Vishnu, although here on this plane you may have an Orion Shila and you may cook for him. Grihasthas and Brahmins will always have Shalagram Shilas of Vishnu, Rupa, or Krishna, or whatever, and they'll cook for him. But there you can't say, well, look, I'd like to cook today for Narayan. And Lakshmi said, forget it. No way. Just like in Puri, in Jagannath Puri, there's 752 cooks or stoves or whatever it is. There's so many cooks over there and pandas that are cooking, but they are simply the assistants. Like we say, sarvato panipadam tat sarvato shi shiromukam. Bhagavad Gita says everywhere are Krishna's hands and eyes and faces, hands and legs, panipadam. So in the same way, everywhere are Lakshmi's hands and faces and eyes and legs. So in Puri, although there's hundreds of different cooks cooking every day for Jagannath Dev, actually all those cooks are Lakshmi Devi. Because it says that every offering there is actually being personally cooked by Lakshmi Devi. So that gives us some idea that in the spiritual world it's like that. You can't cook an offering for Narayan. It's like, no way. Lakshmi does it. And it's a very, very controlled atmosphere. So that's where you go if you only perform Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti brings you to that kind of atmosphere on reverence. It was a very interesting discussion I was hearing about, you know, the Vaikuntha and the relationships there. How there's very, very little chance to do any personal service, practically none. Because all personal service to Lord Narayan is only done by his eternal associates, especially Lakshmi, etc. So I just read, because here in the purport it talks about Shantaras, Sakyavatsalya, Sringhar. So in Shantaras, is a neutral stage, which is between impersonalism and personalism. There's very little attraction for the personal features of the Lord. There's more attraction for the Paramatma, or Supersoul. A Shanta Bhakta sees the Supersoul, Chaturbhuj, Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, and all in reverence. This state is achieved by impersonalists who have gained the association of a pure devotee, because they can then begin to appreciate the Supreme Lord. So that example is there of the Shukamuni also, and the four Kumaras, that they were impersonalists, and by association with devotees, and the four Kumaras, they got to smell some tulsi, maha tulsi from the Lord's feet. And Shukadev Goswami got to associate with devotees, his father, and then he gave up his impersonal idea. So, but still, they only come to Shantaras. Of course, I said it yesterday. Some say the Shantaras is not really devotional service, but since there's some appreciation is there, it's accepted as one of the five rasas. There's no Shantaras in Braj. So generally, when they categorize Shantaras, they say the land is in Shantaras, trees are in Shantaras, animals, birds are in Shantaras. But when Acharyas analyze Vrindavan, they say there's no Shantaras in Vrindavan. Practically speaking, there's only one ras in Vrindavan. What's that ras? Madhurya ras. Everything has a sweetness, and all other rasas, ultimately all rasas have a connection with Madhurya ras. So they say that you can't find such a thing as Shantarati, or attachment to Krishna and Shantaras in awe and reverence in Vrindavan. And then they go on to explain each thing that ordinarily, in Vaikuntha, there is Shantaras. The trees are in Shantaras. They just stand there. And Lord Narayan walks by. They don't do anything. They just do what they give shade. But when Krishna comes to the forest in Vrindavan, as soon as when he enters the forest and he's playing on his flute, then the trees hear the flute. And then they start, their leaves start shaking. And they start trembling. They start showing sattvic bhavs, bodily transformations, which are the result of contacting, stimulating their sthayi bhav. So and these type of sattvic ecstasies aren't in Shantaras ordinarily. These are the kind of ecstasies that are revealed in higher rasas. So the trees, they reciprocate with Krishna's flute playing and the awareness that he's come. They become thrilled. Their hearts are those devotees in the form of trees in Vrindavan. They become thrilled with ecstasy, and they exhibit ecstatic symptoms. They tremble with their leaves, and they cry with honey. The honey from their branches is running down their arms and running down their bodies. And in this way, they bend over to touch Krishna's feet out of humility, and they offer their fruits. They just let them drop them on the ground practically. So that's how they explain it, that the different trees and the animals, they're not really any Shantaras in Vrindavan. It's that in Braj, when the land, the trees, the flowers, the fruits, the stones, the cows, although they're so-called Shantarati or Shantaras, They are mixed with other intimate, more personal types of loving ecstasies. For example, cows are considered shantaras, just on reverence. But actually, they have maternal affection. One of the symptoms of vatsalya ras, or maternal love, is that is called nourishment, or wanting to feed the child, or have a child, and to nourish and feed the child. So the cows, they had desire like that. They're not just in shantarati. They're in this, but they have this vatsalya, this motherly mood. So Krishna, understanding that, and to also show the world, see my braj, see the beauty of my braj, see how unusual it is. I'm in Vaikuntha with so many thousands of Surabhi cows. But there's no question of the Surabhi cows in Vaikuntha having this kind of vatsalya ras. They give milk, and unlimited milk, and that's all. But see, look at my Surabhi cows in Vrindavan. See the sweetness of Vrindavan? See the speciality? They want to be my mothers? And then I just to show you the difference between Shantarati and Braj and Shantarati and Vaikuntha, I become a calf. I become thousands and thousands of calves. I make this whole arrangement that Brahma, although he's so intelligent, he becomes completely bewildered. Brahma Vimohan Leela. And then he acts such a crazy man. He comes and steals all my friends and calves for one moment. And one moment of demigod's time is 1 year of our time. And during that time, I'm able to execute so many additional leelas and to teach so many things and accomplish so many things as one activity. So I was able to accept the love in the form of the milk from the elderly gopis who wanted me as their son. Because every time I was stealing butter from them, they were trying to snatch me and catch me. But at the same time, they were so captivated by my beauty, and they're always thinking day and night about and desiring to have me as their son. So I became their son for 1 year, and then the cows wanted to be my mother and nourish me and feed me their milk. So I became their sons for 1 year. So in this way, Krishna showed that the cows are also experiencing vatsalya ras in Vrindavan. And like that. And then the flute, there's a whole section in Chaitanya Charitamrita about the flute. Flute is just a piece of bamboo with some holes in it. Vamshi. It's certainly that shantaras that's kind of just, neutral, passive. We say passive adoration or a neutral posture towards the Lord. It doesn't seem very personal or very intimate. But then we find something different in the Veno Gita or in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Gopis are envious of that flute. They say, hey, what is this? You're drinking the nectar of Krishna's lips, which is meant only for us? What kind of pious activities did you do to receive such a fortunate position? Krishna's lips and the nectar therein is reserved only for us. How is it you've achieved such an intimate position with the Lord? So even a so-called, impersonal object, what to speak of animals, at least animals like cows that they're personal and they're persons. Of course, the flute is also personal. Just like in the Vallabha Sampradaya, Harivamsha. They say Harivamsha, hit Harivamsha. Hit Harivamsha. They say he's the incarnation of Hari's flute. That's why he's called Harivamsh. Vamsh means flute, and Hari, incarnation of Hari's flute. And then we have one of our Avadhut Acharyas, Gaudiya Acharyas. It's called Vamshi Vadan. I think it's Vamshi Vadan. Vamshi Das Baba, there was one book that was written about. So he was supposed to be incarnation of Krishna's flute. So ultimately, all of Krishna's paraphernalia is also personal. Just like we say the chakra, we say the Sudarshan chakra, that represents the wheel of time. The invincible wheel of time, or represents, razor sharp, disc. It represents so many things, but ultimately in the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, the Sudarshan Chakra is a forearm form of the Lord's associate, Chaturbhuj, devotee of the Lord, forearm devotee of the Lord, personal, standing there with folded hands, waiting for his next mission. For example, he's standing there next to Lord Narayan, and then some devotee gets offended, right? Ambrish Maharaj gets offended by Durvasa. So then Narayan sees that. He says, oh, look at this rascal Muni. He's offended Ambrish Maharaj. Sudarshan, take him to the task. Do the work. Sudarshan, yes, sir. Then he goes off and you know becomes Sudarshan and chases gives Durvasamuni a kind of gives him a good run, chased around the universe. So like that, everything's personal. But the flute is tasting the nectar of Krishna's lips, just like the gopis in Madhurya Ras. So here's an impersonal Shanta Ras all the way up to Madhurya Ras, tasting Krishna's lips. So here in Braja Gokul, Shanta Ras is mixed with conjugal or Sringhar Ras. So there's the main quality, of course, of Shanta Ras is on reverence. Each rasa has a particular quality. So Dasya Rati, reverential service. So this is that you see the difference. One, like in Shanta Rati, it's on reverence, but here in Dasya Rati or Dasya Ras, there's service, but it's in the mood of awe and reverence, generally. Although there's different categories of that also. So the element of service is added to the mood of awe and reverence, which is found in Shanta Rati. So a devotee can obtain favor from the Lord. A mood of reverence predominates, but one voluntarily does service. If one has pure Dasya Rati or Bhakti like Hanuman, he will go to Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, Dwarka, or Mathura. But if Dasya Bhakti is mixed with other rasas, he can go to Nanda Maharaja's home in Nandagaon. So you see, when there's pure Dasya Bhakti, like in Hanuman, for example, he serves the Lord, but it's up to a certain point. He can't overstep the bounds of on reverence. Whereas Krishna's servants, sometimes Krishna's servants in Vrindavan, because they're mainly in Dasya Rati, but because their Dasya Rati is mixed with Sakya Ras, with friendship, sometimes they can overstep the bounds of that formal servitude mood, and they can wrestle with Krishna, or they can have a little more intimate exchange. For example, the example is given is sometimes Krishna's house servants, Krishna wants to play with them. Then he says, okay, we'll have a wrestling match, and whoever wins, he has to carry the winner on, whoever wins, the loser has to carry the winner on his shoulders. So then, sometimes Krishna loses, then one of his servants, he has to carry his servant on his shoulders. But he can do that in Vrindavan. But there's no question, you can't imagine a situation where Ram would wrestle with Hanuman, and Hanuman, would beat Ram. Of course, they could go, and then Ram would carry him on his shoulders. It's not conceivable. There's because that formality pervades that Ayodhya Dham or Ram's relationship. So this is called pure Dasya Rati. Of course, that's the glory of Hanuman, and Sanatana Goswami describes that in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that he's citing the archetypal examples of different devotees who represent different qualities of bhakti, beginning from Karma Mishra Bhakti to Jnana Mishra Bhakti to Shuddha Bhakti to Dasya Bhakti to Mishanta Bhakti, Dasya Bhakti, etc. So when we come to the platform of Shuddha Bhakti and Shanta Ras, the example given in Brihad Bhagavatamrita is Prahlad Maharaj. Then when we go to the next platform of pure Dasya Rati, that example is given to Hanuman. And there's so many descriptions there. So this is the example of pure service. So if one has that kind of pure Dasya Rati or Dasya Ras Bhakti like Hanuman, he'll go to Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, Dwarka, or Mathura. But if a Dasya Bhakti is mixed with other rasas, you can go to Braja Gokul. Because in Krishna's house, his servants are in Dasya Ras, but they have some touch of parental affection. So they care for Krishna's welfare, and they're concerned for him, and they even look after him like a parent. So there's different examples of Dasya Bhaktas that are given by Acharyas. So one is appointed servants, like the demigods, Shiva and Brahma. They're always fixed in pure service. Then Kaliya Nag. They say that Kaliya, he is also in Dasya Bhakti. He serves under the direction and shelter of the Lord. In other words, the Lord gets to dance on his head. That's his service. He offers his head in the service of the Lord. So Krishna is kicking his head, and he gets great pleasure out of that. Sometimes, that's also kind of a rasa. So that's his service. He's listed there. Then the third category is the Dasya Bhaktas of Dwarka. These are the constant associates of the Lord. So the third category of Dasya Bhaktas are the constant associates of the Lord in Dwarka, such as Uddhava, Daruka, Satyaki. They have various lustrous bodies and costly ornaments. The best of those servants is Uddhava. Now the fourth category is followers of the Lord, like Stumbha and Suchandra. And the fifth category is the sons of the Lord in Dwarka. Krishna's sons, he has quite a few of them. He has 1.6 lakhs. 1.6 lakhs of sons. Is that right? 1.6 lakhs. And if everyone asks for 10 rupees a week allowance, it gets pretty costly. Nowadays, if they're in ISKCON, that wouldn't go far at all. It's 10 rupees a day or an hour or something. Kids in ISKCON allowance. Then another cat. So the devotees in pure servitude, they're not as intimate as devotees with a mixture of rasa. In Dwarka, Krishna's sons ride on his shoulders. And they're in Dasiras, but they're serving Krishna, but they ride on his shoulders. You know, everyone knows that daddy has to become a horsey. Daddy has to become a horsey for the kiddies, right? You know, hey daddy, get down on all fours. Okay, I'll get on your back. Okay, now go in the kitchen, see mommy. Okay. And the wife looks off. Look quite interesting there. You know, so even Krishna, he has to get on all fours. And, Pradyumna or, his different sons get on his back and they ride into the kitchen and show Rukmini and say, look at me, I'm riding a horsey. But in Ayodhya, Hanuman never sits on Ram's shoulders because he's also in Dasiras, but there's more formality in that Dasiras. So Dwarka is a little sweeter than Ayodhya, but still quite a bit of formality. Now in Sakya Bhaktas or Sakiras, the devotee feels more intimate with God and a sense of equality with the Lord in a loving attitude. The main quality of Sakiras is conviction. The main quality of Dasiras is the element of service. And the main quality of Shantaras is awe and reverence. So this is conviction. In other words, one's convinced of the loving mood he has with Krishna. There's equality in friendship wherein a devotee is firmly convinced of the Lord's love and he's fearless. Example, the Pandavas and Sudama and Draupadi. The Pandavas, Sudama and Draupadi were in this Sakya Bhakti. Vrindavan, the well-wishers of the Lord, the older coward boys, they're also in Sakiras. They want to protect Krishna like his parents, Balaram, Gobata, Mandali, Bhadra. Then there's confidential friends. So there's different categories of friendship. This is described in Mathura Mahatyam by Rupa Goswami. Surit Paksha and different terms are there. Can't remember all of them. We say in English, confidential friends. So Madhu Mangal and Sridham are confidential. But intimate friends are Subal and Ujwala. Subal is probably Krishna's dearest friend, most intimate friend, closest friend. He shares the most Madhu Mangal and Subal are engaging in many of Krishna's Madhurya pastimes with the gopis in Madhyan Lila at Radhakund. They're there, but no one plays a more intimate role. None of Krishna. In other words, we have like a few close friends, and there may be one that's closer than anybody. That's our bosom friend. He's our Surit. Suridam Sarvadeinam, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. means he's in our heart. Surit means near and dear to our heart. We can share our heart to with him or her. And so that's Subal. And there's a beautiful pastime that happened where, you know, there's that when Radharani and Subal exchanged clothes. And Radharani tested Krishna's love by taking the part of Subal, disguising herself as Subal, and returning to the Kunj and pretending to still be Subal. And at that time, she tested the purity of Krishna's love for her. Because when she came back disguised as Subal, then Krishna was upset. He said, "Oh, Subal, you came back. You failed in your mission to bring me Radharani. How can I carry on?" So then Radharani started, in the voice of Subal, she started saying, "Oh, who needs that Radharani anyway? You know, just over here is Gauri Tirtha. We can be there in a few minutes. And Chandravali is waiting there with open arms and a softened heart to receive you with all of her varieties of moods and bhavas. And why don't we just go there. We can just go there. Forget about Radha. By the time, let's just sing a little song. And by the time we get there, we'll forget all about Radharani." And then Krishna just said, "No," and puts his hand, he says, "No, stop. You know, why are you saying that? Chandravali is nothing. My Chandra is Chandramukhi, Radharani. I don't care anything about Chandravali. She's like just some scratches." Because Chandravali also means scratch. You know, when you get some scratch marks and on your, it's called Chandravali. So she's just some scratch marks. And then, Radharani goes, speaks some different ways, try to, in testing Krishna's love. And she's saying different things. And finally, Krishna, he says, "Stop. Don't say anything more." So then Krishna puts his hand on Subal's mouth. But it's not Subal's mouth, it's Radharani's mouth. And then, as soon as he does that, he feels it. As soon as he touches Radharani, then his hair stands on end and he starts trembling. And then he looks and then he understands that I never have this feeling when I contact. I mean, I always wrestle with Subal and we always touch each other and wrestling. I never had this experience. So then he looks, it's like hands like this, and then he looks at Radharani and Radharani looks at him. And then he understood that it wasn't Subal. So Subal, of course, brought this whole pastime about. And Subal has this special feature of having the same color of body as Radharani. So that's quite helpful to remind Krishna of his beloved Radharani. So Subal is considered one of the most intimate friends of the Lord in Sakiras. Next ras is Vatsalya Rati. And the main quality of Vatsalya ras, or parental love, is affection. That's what it's described. The affection or parental love. Wherein the devotee feels that he must protect and maintain the Lord, just like a son. The Nectar of Devotion, it lists 9 different personalities that have a Vatsalya or parental rasa with Krishna. First and foremost, in terms of the intensity of her Vatsalya bhav, which far exceeds even that of her husband, is Mother Yashoda. There is no greater personality that displays more intense or beautiful form of parental love than Mother Yashoda. Then she's followed by Nanda Maharaj, Rohini, the elderly gopis, because they're the ones, they had Vatsalya Rasa or Krishna because they're the ones who's had their sons stolen by Brahma. That's the fourth category. Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, Rohini, the elderly gopis, Mother Devaki, and the 15 different wives of Vasudev. Otherwise, then Mother Kunti and Vasudev and Sandipani Muni. These 9 personalities are in Vatsalya Ras. And then Madhurya Ras, the last of the 5. The main quality of Madhurya Ras is sweetness. Makes sense. Madhurya means sweetness. So each one has a main quality. So one is awe and reverence, and one is conviction, right? What is it? On reverence, what is it? And then on reverence and service and conviction, then affection, then this is sweetness. Devotees are attracted by the sweet qualities of the Lord, which arouse conjugal feelings towards the Lord. The main quality of Madhurya Rasa is sweetness. This is seen in the Dwarka queens and Braja gopis. The Astashakis are All the different ashtasakis are group leaders. They're called yuteshri. They're group leaders. They have eight sakis under each one of them, but they're always kind of submissive to the lead of Lalita Sakhi, although each one is capable. Tungavidya, Chitra, Vishaka, they're all group leaders, and they can have intimate pastimes alone with Krishna and independent of Lalita, but they kind of position themselves to be subordinate to Lalita and let her act as the guru. And they, all these eight sakis, although they have their group, they prefer to serve Radharani. When they're alone without Radharani, these individual gopis like Vishaka, Champak, etc. are group leaders. When they're with Radharani, they let her take over. They usually take the side of Radharani when there's quarrels with Krishna, and they criticize and ridicule the followers of Chandravali. They praise their own group at the same time. Lalita is also the leader of the gopis of Lord Balaram. Rupa Goswami says in Mathura Mahatmya there's 800,000 eternally perfect gopis. But it just gives us an idea because actually there's no way to count. He says that there's 8 lakhs of gopis that have always ever been and eternally ever existing. 800,000 gopis in the camp of Krishna in Braja Gokul. But there's always so many more coming all the time. So there's really no way of counting them. So this is just kind of a brief overview of different rasas that are mentioned in verse 36. In 37 it goes on to discuss more about ras and the 64 different arts, and specifically discusses Sringhar ras. So we'll discuss that tomorrow. Some questions?
Are they expansions?
Well, yeah, they're all empowered. They're like Lakshmi of Vaish. Obviously, Lakshmi doesn't have a big fat belly, and Fonda is in Puri with a big belly, and they're obviously not directly Lakshmi, but they're empowered by Lakshmi, and that's what they say, that because obviously, just like Krishna in the spiritual world, Krishna, he only eats things cooked by Radharani. Yashoda would try to cook for him, but he would just play around with his food, and she was cooking, and then finally Radharani Haribom. Finally, Radharani got the boon from, Durvasa Muni. And then when that came to be known, then she was practically the only cook for Krishna. She would cook in the morning right at Krishna's house, and in the afternoon Mother Yashoda would send for things from her house, so she would send different cakes and pies from her house for the 4 o'clock offering, the afternoon offering. And then in the evening time when they go out for rasa, the gopis bring so many tiffins. So morning, noon, and night, Krishna's eating food cooked by Radharani. So in the same way, Jagannath or Dwarkanath, he's always eating food cooked by Lakshmi. So Dwarkadish is residing in Puri as Jagannath. And he naturally, those cooks have to be, and Lakshmi's actually doing all the cooking. Because Jagannath will only take food cooked by the hand of Lakshmi. Just as Krishna will only take food cooked by the hand of Radharani. Yeah, so it's a little bit of mystical arrangement there in the kitchen. I said when you buy prasad, sometimes if you buy some these different size pots, some of the pots are actually the ones they used to cook in, and they're black on the bottom because that's the bottom pot. But what they'd have these clay pots with, say, rice in it, dal, different things. But there was a pot on the bottom, and then there's the same size pot, and they put 10 of them on top of each other, and the fire's on the bottom. And somehow, the one on the top cooks first, which makes it practical. Then you take that one off, and 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So the one that's closest to the fire cooks last, and the one that's furthest from the fire cooks first. So ask your empiric scientist to explain that. It's called observable reality. It's real, we saw it, but it's called a chintya. It's like, I'm sure they could probably figure out something, but at any rate, that's the way it is. You can go in the kitchen and see it also. So it's like that, only that, because Lakshmi, she's a pretty clever cook. I mean, she doesn't have a Vinod pressure cooker or anything, but somehow she figured out how to get the job done. In a way to mystify all the cooks of the world. So just as Krishna mystifies everyone with his sweet behavior and transcendental pastimes, So even Lakshmi Devi, she mystifies the greatest of cooks with her expertise in the kitchen. So try that out. Stack 10 pots on top of each other and put a fire under the bottom one and see what happens. Yeah. Prabhupada was asked that question about, you know, upgrading your ras from business class to first class. And apparently if you fly enough miles, you get a free upgrade. Yeah, that you can do like that. Because Krishna's, you know, he's not static, he's ecstatic. And he's ecstatically multi-directional dynamic. So whichever direction you want to move in, he has the dynamism to move you in that direction in an ecstatic fashion, according to your desire. Yaya tamam prapadyante. So Krishna likes variety, and if you feel that, you know, you somehow express it due to association or due to your attraction, you want to serve the Lord in another way, he's certainly not going to limit your expression of your free will. The very conception of free will is a gift of his anyway. Why would he limit what he's given you? Free will is the nature of the jiva, so it's been given, it's God-given. So you may be designated in a particular way, but somehow you may want to serve in a different way. So you can certainly change. But it's also told that why are you associating with Gaudiya Vaishnavas? Why didn't you end up in Sri Rangam temple and associate with the Sri Vaishnavas? Or why didn't you meet Ram Bhaktas and so? Whatever. So everything has a cause. You know, there's someone inside your heart that's actually directing everything. And the more we advance in spiritual life, the more we realize who the director is and how he's directing. So that we're in the movie, and there's the director. And we're the star of the movie, or we'll say a co-star. And the director is Krishna. And he's directing the wanderings of all living entities, even you. So if you've been directed, you've been directed to come here and to come to this side, to these sadhus, and to this place, and to these temples, and to these books, that's not by chance. Everything has a cause. So Krishna knows the sarupa of every jiva. So he's making all arrangements. From beginning of time immemorial, he's making all arrangements. So as soon as we, our selfish desires diminish and our selfless desires arise, then the Lord takes an active hand in the direction in the directing of the jiva. But as long as our selfish desires predominate, then the Lord just he goes to sleep in the back seat and lets, you know, the material energy do the work. But when the selfless desires arise, then Krishna wakes up from the back seat and starts giving back seat directions to the driver. Right? Back seat driver. And he says, go here, go there. And that's called Daivi Shakti. That one comes under the divine energy, then he starts moving on the path of divinity under the Lord's direct guidance. And that's called Mahatma. So when one starts to follow the Mahatmas, Mahatmanas Tumam Parta, Daivam Prakritam Ashrita. He takes shelter of the spiritual energy, which is the personal direction of the Lord. So when you surrender to the Lord, then he starts to take personal direction. And then perfection is soon at hand, soon to be achieved.